blood then fades. One small change in a
Welcome to Base by Base.
Hello.
Today, we're tackling a really critical area in the ongoing fight against, well, a devastating disease, malaria.
That's right.
Specifically, we're going to unpack some compelling research into how well a key preventative drug is holding up. That's sulfadoxin pyrimethamine, or SP.
Yeah, SP. Despite a lot of progress, you know, malaria is still a huge problem, especially for young children in Africa.
Absolutely. And chemo prevention, giving these preventative drugs, it's just a vital strategy. SP has been a real workhorse there for ages.
It really has.
And to really get a handle on the current picture, we're looking into a study published in Nature Communications back in 2025. It's by Andrea Massa and colleagues.
Mm.
And what this research really uncovers is, well, kind of a stark reality. A drug that was once, you know, a cornerstone offers dramatically different protection levels now.
Yeah, and it all depends on the specific genetic makeup of the malaria parasite itself.
Which could totally reshape how we fight the disease, right?
Exactly. This study really zeroed in on that crucial question. How do these specific mutations in the DHPS gene...
The ones we know are linked to resistance to the sulfadoxin part.
Right. How do they actually impact SP's ability to, you know, shield people from getting malaria in the first place?
And the implications for designing prevention programs are just massive.
Huge.
What's really powerful about this research, I think, is the scale. It wasn't just some small, isolated study.
No, not at all. Musa and colleagues, they pooled data from 7 different efficacy trials.
7 trials?
Yeah.
And that covered over 1,600 people across 12 different sites in Africa.
Yeah, that's a huge amount of real-world data to work with.
So by bringing all that information together, they could get a much more granular picture.
Exactly. A much finer understanding of how these different DHPs mutations affect how long SP can actually protect someone.
Okay, so our goal today is to really unpack the details here. We want to understand their methods, the key findings, and, you know, what it all means for malaria prevention going forward.
Sounds good.
Okay, so let's start with how they actually went about analyzing all this data. Where did it come from?
Well, the study was retrospective, so they were looking back at data that had already been collected.
Right.
From those 7 therapeutic efficacy studies you mentioned. These trials happened between 2000 and 2006.
Okay, a little while ago then.
Yep.
And in places where malaria is really common.
Yes, exactly. Mm. Malawi, Tanzania, Benin, Mozambique, and South Africa. And crucially, all the participants in those original trials had confirmed Plasmodium falciparum malaria.
Got it. And you mentioned a key element before figuring out if an infection was new or just the old one coming back.
Yes, that was critical. Distinguishing new infections from what's called recrudescence.
How did they manage that?
They used PCR polymerase chain reaction. It's a molecular tool that lets you see the parasite's genetic fingerprint.
Oh.
And that was vital because it allowed them to spot the new infections. And even more importantly for this study, identify the specific genetic traits of the parasites causing those new infections.
With a specific focus on those DHPs gene mutations.
Exactly.
So they were essentially tracking how fast people got reinfected with parasites carrying different versions of that DHPS gene, concentrating on positions 437, 540, and 581.
Precisely. And based on whether those specific mutations were there or not, they defined the key DHPS genotypes they were interested in.
Okay, what were they?
So first there was AKA. That's the genotype that's still susceptible to sulfadoxin, meaning no key mutations at those spots.
The baseline, kind of.
Sort of, yeah. Then they looked at GKA, which has the 437 mutation.
Okay.
Then GEA, which has mutations at both 437 and 540. That's a higher resistance level.
Right.
And finally, GEG, mutations at all three. 437, 540, and 581. That represents the highest resistance level they looked at.
Okay, so quite a range of resistance profiles. They had this huge data set tracking reinfections, the specific genotypes.
Yeah.
How did they actually crunch the numbers? How do you estimate protection duration from that?
Right, this is where it gets interesting. They used a pretty sophisticated tool, a Bayesian mathematical model.
Okay, Bayesian modeling. Why that approach?
Well, what's really neat about this type of model is it let them account for a couple of really important variables that change a lot from place to place.
Like what?
Like the intensity of malaria transmission, basically, how often people are likely getting bitten by infected mosquitoes.
Okay, the local risk level.
Exactly. And also, how common the different parasite genotypes were in each specific study site, because that varies too.
So the model helps adjust for the fact that, you know, the malaria situation isn't the same everywhere. gives a clearer picture.
Precisely. Think of it like trying to predict rain. You need data from lots of places about temperature, wind, humidity.
To get an accurate forecast overall. Yeah. Makes sense.
Yeah. So here, the model takes data on malaria risk and the local parasite types from all these different African sites to get a more precise estimate of how long SP actually protects.
And how did it estimate that duration?
It essentially fits statistical curves. They're called Weibull survival curves to the data on when people got reinfected.
Survival curves.
Yeah.
So like modeling the probability of staying infection-free over time.
Exactly. It's not a simple SP works for X days, then stops.
Right. That wouldn't feel very biological.
No. The model estimates partial protection, which is a really key concept here.
Partial protection.
Yeah. It means they were looking at the likelihood of being protected at any given point in time after getting SP. It's not all or nothing on a specific day.
That makes much more sense.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so they did all this complex modeling with the treatment study data. Was that the end of it?
No, they actually took another really important step, validation.
Ah, checking their work, basically.
Kind of, yeah. They wanted to see if their findings held up in a slightly different context. So they used data from two other studies.
What kind of studies?
These were trials focused specifically on preventing malaria in infants. Intermittent preventative treatment in infants, or IPTI trials. One was in Mozambique, the other in Tanzania.
So they took what they learned from people who already had malaria and checked if it matched up with results from trying to prevent it in babies.
Exactly. A really vulnerable group. It's a very rigorous approach.
Definitely sounds like it. How did that validation turn out?
We'll get to that. But first, the core results from the main analysis. After all that meticulous work, what did Musa and colleagues find out about SP protection against these different parasites?
Right, the big reveal. What were the key findings?
Well, the results were pretty stark, actually. They found that the duration of SP protection varied very significantly depending on the DHP's genotype of the parasite causing the next infection.
Okay, so which ones fared best and which worst?
The longest protection, by far, was against those sulfadoxin-susceptible parasites, the AKA genotype.
Right, the ones without the key mutations.
Exactly. Against those, SP protected for well over 42 days. The model's mean estimate was almost 56 days.
56 days?
Wow. Yeah, with a credible interval suggesting anywhere from like 47 to 72 days. That's a decent window of protection.
That really is substantial. What about the ones with mutations? How did they compare?
Well, against the GKA genotype that's considered the West African type, the protection was noticeably shorter. The estimated mean duration was around 34 days. Still something, but, you know, a definite drop.
Okay, a drop. But what about the others? The GEA type.
Ah, that's where it really plummeted. Against the GEA genotype, the East African type, the estimated mean duration was only about 10.7 days.
Just under 11 days. That's
yeah.
That's a massive difference from 56 days.
It's huge. It really slams home the impact of those mutations.
Wow. And the most resistant one they looked at, the GEG.
Similar story, unfortunately. Parasites with that highly resistant GEG genotype also showed a very short duration of protection, estimated at just under 12 days, 11.7.
Okay.
Though it's worth noting that GEG estimate was based on data from just one of the original studies.
Right, so maybe a bit less certainty around that specific number. Makes sense. Now, you mentioned some trials used SP plus artesanate SPS. Did adding artesanate help?
Good question. Interestingly, for the susceptible AKA and the GKA genotypes, SPS gave pretty similar protection duration to SP on its own.
Oh, okay. No big boost there.
Not really, but against the GEA genotype, the more resistant East African one, SPS did offer a notable advantage. It extended the mean protection duration to about 16 and a half days.
So up from about 11 days with SP alone.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So adding artesanate seems to give a bit more time against some of the more resistant types, even though artesanate itself doesn't stick around in the body for very long.
That's interesting. Okay, so now back to that validation step. They compared these findings to the IPTI trials in infants.
Yeah.
How did that go?
Yeah, how well did the model's predictions match what actually happened in Mozambique and Tanzania?
Right.
The alignment was actually quite remarkable.
Really?
Yeah. In Mozambique, where that GEA genotype was common, and in Tanzania, where both GEA and GEG were prevalent, the model's predictions about how quickly those infants would get reinfected after getting SP preventative treatment, they closely matched the actual observed rates in those trials.
Wow. So the model held up really well in a real-world prevention scenario.
It did. It really boosts confidence that these estimates are accurate and applicable.
That's compelling stuff.
Oh.
So let's talk discussion. What does all this mean? What are the big takeaways from the MASA paper?
Well, the findings just powerfully illustrate how much these DHPs mutations really compromise SP's effectiveness, especially the duration of protection.
And the fact that it worked so well against the susceptible ones makes sense based on how the drug works.
Right. Exactly. It aligns well with what we know about SP's pharmacokinetics, how the drug behaves in the body.
But that dramatically shorter protection, where GEA and GEG are common, that really paints a concerning picture for using SP preventatively in those areas.
It really does. It underscores the huge challenges. And as we said, the validation using the IPTI data just strengthens the reliability of these protection estimates for guiding public health strategies.
Did this study offer any thoughts on what to do in those high resistance areas? Alternatives.
Yes, it did. Based on these findings, the researchers suggest that alternative chemo prevention strategies might be needed where SP resistance is high.
Like what?
They specifically mentioned combining SP with imodiaquine, that's SPAQ.
Okay.
And they pointed to a trial in Malawi where resistance to imodiaquine itself was low at the time. In that trial, SPAQ gave considerably longer protection against the GEA genotype compared to SP alone.
So it's not just about SP resistance, but also resistance to potential partner drugs like imodiaquine. You need to know the whole picture locally.
Absolutely critical. Which leads to another practical output from this research.
Oh.
They developed a web-based tool.
The tool? For what?
To predict the protective efficacy of SP based on the local frequencies of these different DHPs genotypes.
Wow, okay, so national malaria programs could use this tool.
Potentially, yes. To help make more informed decisions, tailor their chemo prevention strategies to the specific resistance patterns in their region or country.
That sounds incredibly useful for people making decisions on the ground. Did the study estimate the overall impact SP might still be having, despite the resistance?
They did try to estimate that. Their modeling suggested that even now, a single dose of SP could still avert, on average, about 4.7 clinical malaria cases per 100 children aged 0 to 2.
Okay, so still having an effect.
Yes, in areas with moderate to high transmission. But, and this is a big but, they stress that this impact will vary a lot geographically.
Depending on those local resistance patterns.
Exactly. It's definitely not one size fits all anymore. The effectiveness is strongly tied to the specific parasote types circulating locally.
So to sum up the conclusions then, this research gives us these crucial genotype-specific estimates of SP protection.
Right. And that level of detail is vital for making smart decisions about its use.
With really direct implications for chemo prevention policies.
Absolutely. Highlighting the need to adapt strategies based on local resistance. You can't just assume SP works equally well everywhere.
Which really underlines the need for ongoing, robust surveillance of these DHPs mutations. We need to track where resistance is high, which types are spreading.
Essential. Molecular surveillance is key to guide decisions about where SP is still effective and where maybe it isn't the best choice anymore.
And that prediction tool sounds like a valuable resource for optimizing SP use and considering alternatives.
Definitely.
Now, like all studies, this one had limitations, right? What did the authors acknowledge?
Yes, they pointed out a few things. One was that the original therapeutic trials didn't always have control groups who got no SP.
Ah, so they had to rely on modeled estimates for transmission intensity.
Right. And they also mentioned that the genetic data for the parasites on the exact day of reinfection wasn't always complete for every single participant.
Understandable with complex field studies. And looking forward, what are the next steps for research in this area?
They highlighted a few key things. Longer follow-up in studies would be good to see how long protection really lasts.
Okay.
Also, more research is needed on resistance patterns for the combination therapies, like SBAQ in different places.
Right, because resistance can emerge to those too.
Exactly. And they also stressed keeping a close eye on other emerging resistance mutations, like one called DHPS431V, which seems to be spreading in parts of West and Central Africa.
So it's a constantly evolving picture. The story of drug resistance just keeps going.
It really does. And ongoing research is absolutely critical if we want to stay ahead and protect vulnerable populations effectively.
Understanding these genotype-specific effects seems fundamental to having evidence-based strategies.
Couldn't agree more.
Well, this has been a really insightful look at the research by Andrea Musa and colleagues. It truly highlights the dynamic nature of drug resistance and, you know, just how important detailed scientific evidence is for informing public health action.
Indeed. It's important work, published as an open access article under the Creative Commons Attribution 4.0 International License, a significant contribution to the global fight against malaria.
And for those of you listening who want to explore this research further, the DOI for the article and a link to that license are available in the description.
Thank you for joining us on Base by Base.
In the lab light, we count the days. A shield in the blood, then it fades. One small change in a parasite line, and the clock runs out before its time. We draw the curves, we watch them fall. Different strains don't wait their turn. If resistance learns a faster way through, protection gets shorter, what do we do? So light up the maps after midnight, follow the markers, read them right. Some places hold on for nearly 2 months, some lose the cover in a matter of. Five days when it's still susceptible, but the mutants make it unpredictable. 10 or 11 and it slips away, while kids still need tomorrow's day. We don't guess, we measure where it breaks, separate new genotype shifts, the answer shifts to keep the guard up.